ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, it's Sam Hawley from ABC News Daily, the podcast that brings you one big story affecting your world each weekday in just 15 minutes.
If you're Vladimir Putin, you're actually very, very much aware and worried about your own personal safety, because realistically in Russia, it's all about regime security and Putin's security than anything else.
Join me for ABC News Daily. Find us on ABC Listen.
Alan Kohler here with That's Business. And this week we've got Katerina Mildren, the 20-something Sydney woman who started her own fashion brand, Katerina Lou, which is her middle name, after graduating from university. Business is now growing at 50% a year, and she employs half a dozen people full time. The name might not be familiar to you, but you've probably seen the clothes on a myriad of Australian and international influencers online, which often go viral and feeds right into what a modern fashion brand like this is trying to do. I interviewed her earlier this year when she had a pop-up store in Paddington in Sydney. And since then, there's been additional pop-ups, a strategy we'll talk about in the interview. Now, this is both a classic story about how to start and grow a business in Australia in the 2020s, how to manage cash flow and stock, and how to grow. But it's also a reflection of how newer business owners and founders are changing the rules on how to market in the era of social media. How to find customers and build a brand in a world of hyper-individualism and tribal loyalty. And the complete stepping away from businesses in fashion and apparel needing bricks and mortar to succeed and survive. So here's Katerina Mildren, founder of Katerina Lou. Well, g'day, Katerina Mildren. Thanks for joining us.
Hello, I'm very excited.
Let's just start at the beginning, shall we? And because I think you started the business... What, at home, did you, on the kitchen table, making clothes yourself, posting them yourself, all that? Mm-hmm. Tell us about how that started.
Yeah, so I started the brand basically straight after I finished uni. I graduated in 2019, obviously right before COVID and everything, so I found myself with no job and living at home, so I just decided to start the brand. I think it's something I always wanted to do, so... I think COVID was a very bad time for a lot of people, but for someone starting a business, it actually came at a really good time for me. So I just started sewing, like no overheads, everything myself.
And who was your first customer?
They were all my friends. My friends were very supportive at the start, and they were all my muses, I'd say. They were in all my photo shoots. So it was very organic kind of start.
I mean, how do you start a business like that? I mean, and when you talk about it, you don't talk about it as a business. You talk about it as a brand. That's how you think about it, right?
I think for me, I studied fashion, so I have no business or marketing background. And I guess that's just how I've always seen the business, to be a brand first. I'm like a creative person, so that always came first, and then the business stuff kind of comes after, even though I'm learning now about 5 years in that that is the most important thing. So every day is a school day running a business.
Yeah, that's right. And how did you get your first customer that's not your friend? I mean, how did that – you started to go beyond friends at some point.
Yes. Yeah, I just posted a lot on social media, organic – social media, Instagram was probably the biggest thing. I guess it's like the best free tool that we have as brand owners in today's world. Like there is obviously paid advertising that I started later on, but the first 2 years, it was just me posting pretty much every day. I think a thing that did really well for me was like the storytelling behind it. Like I was making everything and people really connect with like craft and like real people. So I think that was something that did really well for me at the start, and what we kind of still push through in such a loud world today. It's like the people behind the brand is so important.
On your LinkedIn profile, there's a whole lot of internships that were done in a variety of fashion brands and businesses. So, I mean, how important were they in you know, forming your views and your knowledge about how to go about it?
Yeah, super important. I think I learned a lot in that. I did a lot of internships while I was at university and school. I actually never really got like a proper job in the fashion industry after I just started my brand. So I definitely am making a lot of mistakes kind of on my own dime, which does hurt sometimes because I don't have that prior experience. But I did learn a lot in those early years just working for lots of different brands for shorter periods of time. I think I was very much like would work somewhere for like 2 weeks to a month and be like, I know everything, and then like go to the next thing for a few months and then maybe something for a 6 month period. So I think that was great for learning, but never really had like a full-time job in the fashion industry prior to starting.
Never got paid. In fact, internship means you didn't get
lots
paid,
of internships,
right?
Yes.
Yeah. And of course, doing a fashion degree, I mean, presumably you don't learn about business in doing that. What do you actually learn in a fashion degree?
No, I did really have fun at uni and I loved the degree itself, but practically what we learnt for the industry was very different. I learned nothing about business. We did a lot of conceptual design, which was very fun, but practically not really what you do in the real world. So all the business stuff has just been on the job, learning, getting mentors after the fact. But we learned how to sew, we learned how to pattern make. So all those things that I guess started my brand, I did learn, but we never learned how to even talk to factories or negotiate prices with factories, like all that kind of stuff that is so integral to the fashion industry. Like, we didn't really learn because it was fashion design, not fashion business, I guess.
Yeah. So tell us about some of the mistakes you made that helped you learn how to do it.
Lots of mistakes. I think the biggest one that comes to mind is as you grow, obviously you buy more stock, and buying too much stock is a very big thing, I guess, for a lot of brands starting out, because you get excited and you see you sell out of something, so you release a new drop and you don't sell anything. So there has been like a few times where I've just been holding on to so much stock and been unsure how I kind of got myself there and how to get myself out. But again, as I've learned, I've got people in the business who actually know the bread and butter of like merchandising stock. So that's something that I can now afford to outsource and have someone teach me in the business. Yeah, that was a big mistake that honestly I'm not perfect at yet. Like, that's a big thing in the fashion industry.
How did you go about lining up people to make your clothes for you, presumably in China and Thailand and other those sort of places? What did you do? Did you go over there? Did you interview factories? What did you do?
Yeah, so I started obviously sewing everything myself. So I do have like a base level of understanding there, which I think is super helpful in the fashion industry. I started doing small runs at Australian factories, which also was super helpful because I could see it firsthand and I could really understand what they were doing, how they were making it. I could pattern make it myself still and give it to the factory. So that was a great kind of stepping stone to working internationally. Factories are super hard to find. It's like a daily battle trying to find new factories and factories that are ethical and like have the quality standard that we want. But I think just organically, as you grow in your career, you meet people who know a factory, or your factory in Australia might have links in China. That's how we started with our Chinese makers. It was connected to our Australian makers. I did go over to China last year for the first time and visited all the factories, which is such a big perk of the job. I love travel and China is amazing. I love going there. I just headed back there at the start of this year too to kind of check in on the factories and see how production was going. And then we also make in Bali as well, which we get all of our swimwear made in Bali, which was also a connection from an Australian fashion brand that I knew and traveled over to start making there.
The other thing is, I noticed that on your website, sustainability and all that stuff and ethically produced clothing is terribly important to your brand.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you go about finding those kind of factories?
Yeah, it's difficult. We have factories in Guangzhou and in Shanghai. One of the factories is actually an Australian connection. So it's run by an Australian Chinese girl that I know that's amazing. So that is an amazing relationship that I have a lot of trust in. I've gone over to the factory and I've seen it all. And then the other factory we work in China, in Shanghai, is connected to our Australian factory, one of our other Australian factories. So it's all kind of connected. We're not just like finding random factories and working with them. We are checking first. We're going there. Another thing with like the sustainability side is like the fabrics we use, the amount we put into production. Like there's so many layers to it other than just like making in Australia from fabrics that we already have kind of thing.
What have you learned about cash flow management? I mean, and obviously that has a fair bit to do with stock that you were talking about before. And how do you, I mean, a lot of entrepreneurs talk about this in terms of, they call it the valley of death that you've got to get through in cash flow terms. How are you handling that and what do you do about it?
Yeah, that's one thing that I have learned. Not the hard way. I think I've always been able to manage that. I'm very lucky I have two accountant parents. So I've had good kind of structures starting out to kind of be able to visibly see my cash flow. But cash is the most important thing in business. It's way more important than being creative, unfortunately. So I have checks every kind of week where I look at every dollar that's coming in and out of the business. And I do that weekly. And I think that's so important as a brand owner to be that on top of it. It's getting harder as we're growing because obviously there's a lot more moving parts now and there's so many different factors. But I think having that like check every week and being just visibly able to see everything is how I'm kind of getting through and how I keep sane when there's a lot of cash moving around.
So both your parents are accountants.
Yes. They? Yes. Very handy.
Well, that's a good start.
It is.
How do you go about paying yourself? Do you kind of live off the business? I mean, what do you do about that?
Yeah, I pay myself. I think I was a sole trader for about 3 years. I think I became a company about 2 years ago now, and I started taking a wage properly from that. Before that, as a sole trader, I feel like I was just like, if we did well, I would take a little bit more money out or a little bit less. Like it was very much just flowing with how I was going. But now, for the last 2 years, I pay myself like I pay my employees. So it's been nice and stable.
How many employees have you got now?
I've got 6 full-timers, including me, and about 5 casual staff. I think that fluctuates with what's going on in the year.
How does that feel, employing people?
It's crazy. I definitely think when I started the brand, that's not something I ever thought I would do. I have no management experience. So it's just learning on the job and everything, but being able to lean on other people is amazing. It's very lonely when you're the only person in your business. So that's been a great thing, but lots of learnings to come from that.
And have you made mistakes about in hiring people? Have you hired some wrong people at times?
I actually haven't had that problem yet, which has been great. I have an amazing team right now. And I haven't had to fire anyone, so that's great. I think that will be a big challenge in itself. And
that'll be
a
that's learning. Ahead of you.
Yes.
That's ahead of you.
Looking forward to it, but not really.
And what about marketing now? Are you still mainly social media? Are you paying influencers at all?
Yeah, so we're mainly social media, and then I would say paid advertising on all of the big platforms. We actually don't pay any influencers. We do a lot of gifting, which has really worked for us as a brand. I just don't really see the merit in paying people who are going to wear the clothes anyway. I think we've built a really good kind of rapport with some influencers who have a lot of style that people look up to in our markets, so we don't have to pay yet. So that's not something that I've ever really delved into.
And which social media platform do you find the most useful? Is it Instagram?
Yeah, it's still Instagram. Definitely on paid advertising side of things on Meta, like that's where we spend the most amount of money. And Instagram's where we kind of started the brand, where we have the most amount of followers, I think. But TikTok's definitely slowly growing. It's a harder one to crack, I think. But we also have Pinterest, which is like probably the least amount of spend that we have. It's a smaller platform, but still an important like way to kind of acquire customers. And then we also have Google as well, which we do spend a bit of money on. That is also quite a great platform to do advertising on.
And how much do you spend on advertising? How do you manage the spend? Do you look at it in terms of a percentage of your revenue or what?
Yeah, we spend a roughly 10 to 15% monthly revenue on paid advertising, which definitely, like, we've kind of ramped that up in the last year, I'd say. Before that, we were spending a lot less, but we've just been growing so quick and kind of just been seeing the return on investment. So that's something we're scaling very slowly. And we're about to start doing paid advertising overseas as well. So we're probably going to spend it a little bit more, closer to 20%, but we kind of just see how we're going with the month, where it kind of sits.
What is your revenue? Can you tell me?
I can tell you a ballpark.
Yeah. What's the ballpark?
The ballpark is, I'd say, like 2 to 4 million a year at the moment.
And what's the growth rate? What, do you look at growth in terms of per month or what?
Yeah.
How are you growing?
I'd say yearly we're growing 50% each year is what we've been doing for the past, since we started, but since about 2 years ago when I started employing people and manufacturing overseas, that growth has really continued, which I think I'm the most proud of, because obviously things are going to grow from sewing from your kitchen table to hiring people, but it's like being able to keep that consistent for the past 2 years has been really cool.
Is it a competitive game?
Very competitive.
That you're in? I mean, it seems pretty competitive.
Yeah.
What are the margins like?
The margins on the actual clothing, I'd say ballpark is about 70%. I think that's pretty standard in fashion, but then obviously we've got staff and rent and all of that. And I think it comes down to about 10-15% is pretty standard in the fashion industry at the end of the year.
For net margin.
Yeah.
So net margin 10-15%,
yeah.
Gross margin 70 or so. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that sounds about right. And you've got a pop-up store in Paddington at the moment. How's that going?
Yes, it's going great. It's so fun to have a store. I feel like from the creative side and kind of why I started the brand, being able to create these spaces and like deck them out as the brand I would want in a physical space is the most exciting part of running the business for me. But just having that physical presence, I think, and kind of legitimizing yourself in the Australian market on Oxford Street, like it's a good thing to do for the brand's growth.
Yeah, but is it about being a good thing to do for your brand, or is it, do you make money out of it? I mean, isn't the margin tighter in a store because you've got to pay rent?
Yeah, we definitely make money out of it. Our pop-ups are our biggest months. We do a Melbourne and Sydney pop-up each year, and that's where we see like a majority of our profit, because we still keep our paid advertising kind of the same. But then on top of that is the pop-up revenue that we get extra. So it's obviously we have to pay rent and staffing fees, which adds on. However, those costs aren't across a year where you would pay like retail across the year. It's just for this like 1 month kind of hype moment. So we get a lot of foot traffic and a lot of customers coming in to experience the space and connect with the brand in person. So we see a big jump in revenue for those 2 pop-ups a year.
So you're going to have a permanent store, do you think?
I would love a permanent store. That's something I'm kind of figuring out at the moment, because we do see like such amazing things come from each pop-up. But I do think that is because of the hype and the kind of like get here now to buy vibe that creates. And I'm not sure how that would correlate into, you know, running a store every day and the outgoings that would add on. But in saying that, I do think it does legitimize the brand, and a lot of people like traveling between like Sydney and Melbourne, or people overseas who know the brand, it would be amazing for people to be able to come to that store and see it as kind of like an Australian fashion brand, which is what I do want to build and create.
Yeah, why don't you just do it? I mean, landlords would be falling over themselves to give you a store, I would have thought.
I know. It is very scary to be signing, because I just signed a lease for our studio. We've been here for about 6 months, and even that kind of step up from running from my house to that was terrifying. But now we've done it, it just feels like so natural and normal.
How long's the lease for?
The lease is for 2 to 3 years. So I know we won't be moving, so we'll be fine. But it is scary when I've never had to do that before. But I guess as you grow and you get used to that kind of stuff, it makes more sense.
Well, if you're growing 50% a year, you'll be right for 3 years, I would have thought.
Yes, I hope so.
And what about being what about being in a department store like Myer or David Jones?
Yeah, that doesn't really tickle my fancy at all. I don't see that as being that important to the brand right now. I do see that as important to some markets and some brands, but I personally don't want to go into wholesale at all. I want us to be solely available on our website or wherever we decide to pop up in person. To protect our margins mainly, I think you do lose a lot when you go into those wholesales and you lose a bit of control. And if we're doing so well direct to consumer, why would we branch out? That's just my view.
You see that as wholesale, do you?
Yes.
Yeah, right. Now, when I go into a department store and they've got the, you know, there's a section of a particular brand, it doesn't look like wholesale. It looks like a sort of a pop-up shop, you know.
Yeah, I guess that's more consignment, but that they only really give those spaces, I guess, to the bigger brands. Like the smaller brands, I believe it is wholesale because you would get like a rack. You wouldn't get like that. Like the big brands like Zimmermann and Beckham Bridge and stuff, they would get like the big spaces that kind of is a pop-up in a way, but the smaller brands, it's more like a rack or, yeah.
So what's your shipping and exchange policies and how did you come up with those? Did you make mistakes to begin with on your shipping and exchange policies, or did you just basically say, okay, this one I'm going to do, and that's how it's worked out?
Yeah, I guess when I started, I just looked at the market. I looked at what everyone else kind of did. I looked at all my competitors or all other small brands and kind of set that. I'd say we were a lot more strict when I was making everything myself because obviously I used to make to everyone's measurements. So I obviously can't take a return on something that is specifically for a customer. And I also just wouldn't have been able to afford that when I was, you know, doing one sale a day. But now I guess we've created kind of a policy based on like market standards, like checking with the ACCC that we're doing everything right. And then we do just adapt as things happen. You know, if we get feedback from customers that something's not working, like our refund period, then we will adjust. But I think it's just going with the flow and checking in.
I must say, you seem pretty strict. You know, it's like it's 14 days and
on our website,
it's okay. If it doesn't fit, that's fine. You can return it. But if you don't like it or you change your mind, you can't return it. Is that right? I mean,
yeah.
So in order to get a return or exchange, it's got to be a different size. Is that so?
Yeah. We do exchange for a credit note as well. So like you can change for a different product and then hold that and then, you know, buy that in the next year or something. I think it's just like a small business thing, I guess, as we're growing and like managing that. But it is pretty standard across like the smaller fashion brands. Obviously, when you go up to like the ASOS and the David Jones, their return is wild. But I think that they lose a lot of money from that.
Yeah, right. And what about shipping to the US at the moment? What's going on with that?
Yeah, so we definitely pulled a lot of our like pushing to the US when the tariffs kind of came in. We were running a few ads and they were doing quite well. We saw a lot of growth in that area, but luckily we hadn't like fully invested in that becoming a huge part of our revenue. Only about 10%, 10 to 15% is overseas and about 10 of that is the US. And that's definitely dropped off since the tariffs. Right now, you can still purchase on our website. So you're just paying like crazy money once it arrives. So we only ship through DHL because they manage sending the customer basically the duties and taxes that are due. But if someone buys a $350 dress from us, the duties and taxes are like over $150. Like it's quite crazy. So we've definitely seen that drop, but we are about to partner with this new company that basically create a international website that includes all of those fees in the product. So the customer doesn't get hit with these crazy fees. They don't know what they're paying for. They pay for it up front and it's just very clear, which I think is going to help conversion a lot because people just don't want the uncertainty of getting hit with a huge fee. They'd be a lot more happy to buy something for this amount, knowing that's what they're going to get.
So what proportion of your sales are overseas at the moment? I guess not much of that is the US, but where are you selling and how much of your sales are overseas?
Yeah, well, it was like 10 to 15 probably last year. I'd have to check exactly what it is now. I think it's definitely dropped probably more to like 5 to 8%. We are like very Australian based. The US was our biggest, mainly just shipping to New York and California. They're the two states that we saw the most traffic. And then we do ship a little bit to Europe. And then I would say London's probably our biggest, like, under the American market.
Do you find that social media is a precarious kind of existence? Because you can get bad reviews as well as good ones, particularly if you're not paying them, you know, like you're not paying influencers, right? So an influencer can come out and say that they hate your stuff, and that would go more viral than you know, the positive one.
Yes, hate does go very viral. It's a very scary time on the internet. Like, I feel like you really are at the whim of your customers. I guess we haven't really had anything too bad. Obviously, people are going to be unhappy with things and bad reviews come up. But I think the world we've built and the brand we've built does have a good reputation that one person isn't going to tarnish that. Now, if everyone came out and had a problem with something, I think that would be a different story. But it's just about really focusing on your customer. I think we really celebrate our customer. We really speak to them and we respond to what they want. So I feel like we've got enough of a backbone off the back of our social media to kind of hold ourselves strong.
And I notice you've got a dinner coming up. Is that part of your community building plan? Is that what you're trying to do?
Yes. So we also host events to basically bring women together that are part of the Caterina Lou community. And I think that's been such an amazing tool for our business growth as well, because it really does show that we do put the customer first. Like, all of my staff come to them. It's so much fun. We really connect with our customers. It's also a great way to talk to our customers and really ask them what they want and what they're looking for. Also, I feel all those customers are just customers for life, because we've not just like sold them a piece of clothing, we've invited them into our world. And I think that's a really exciting space and something I do want to grow with the business, this kind of community building branch to it.
What's the long-term plan, Caterina? What's the game? Is it just going to keep building it? Do you think at some point you'll exit or list it or what?
I don't know. This does change a lot. I feel like the last few months I've really been thinking about this, because it's kind of grown into this thing, this way bigger thing than I ever could have imagined. I do think this is like my life's project. I always do want to be with the brand. Like, it is my life. I spend pretty much every living waking hour on it. But I do think getting a little bit more like executive help and higher up help would be something that I do want to continue to grow it, because I feel like I was the best person to maybe get it to this point. But now I'm kind of running this actual company that employs this many people and does this many sales and all the logistics. I feel like getting some higher ups maybe to assist me in my next step goals would be something in the short term that I'm looking for. And then longer term, I guess I do really want to open stores. Like, that is something that I would love to do. I would love to have boutiques around the world. But obviously we'll just see how the world kind of pans out in the next 5 to 10 years.
Boutiques around the world. There you go.
Yes.
Well, it sounds like you haven't got much of a work-life balance at the moment.
No, I definitely don't. I'm learning that slowly.
Well, it's been great talking to you, Caterina Mildren. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining me on That's Business. You can find That's Business on the ABC Business Daily feed every Friday. So you don't miss out, make sure you follow ABC Business Daily to find us on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're a fan of what we're making, tell a friend about us and where to find us. Carrington Clark and the ABC Business Daily team will be back in the feed on Monday.